Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, happy Tuesday to you. Welcome to this first full day of summer. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls, and Chris is at the phones, and looking forward to a good hour. And boy, it looks like a great day across all our listening area, including Hartford. A little warm in Hartford, but summertime.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Soak it up if you have a moment to just step outside, maybe during a lunch break, after the show, of course.
Of course, sure.
Take it in, because, these days are few and far between in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, we should just take every opportunity to enjoy the beauty of God's creation. That's going to be part of our conversation today, as we're not necessarily talking specifically about God's creation, but how it is just one of the ways that God reveals himself to us. Yeah. And it's a great time to just kind of reconnect with the wonder and majesty of who God is.
Think about just taking a breath and how we take that for granted. Yeah. But when you take a deep breath, you really reflect and go, wow, God, we are fearfully and wonderfully made.
No question about it. We're going to get to today's guest in just a moment. Looking forward to having him back with us. But I do want to just mention that we are in the midst during this month, a campaign, a partnership with FEBC to help provide radios. Many of them are fixed tune or even some solar powered radios. To people that are really hungry for the gospel. And these are placed by FEBC staff in strategic places where the signal goes out, but people don't have a radio because it costs more than what they could afford if they're living on a couple dollars a day. And each radio has the power to reach about 25 people or more with the gospel, and it's a $30 gift, and we're inviting you to give a radio during this month, givearadio.org.
When you were speaking about awe a moment ago, and you were just telling me before we went on air today, Neil, about how some people think they're literally hearing the voice of God come through the radio and the truth that's being shared, right?
It's because it's so precious to people that are truly hungering for God's word. We often take it way too much for granted. Mm. So it's an opportunity to partner with us and FEBC. They have a potential reach of 3 billion people, and they get millions of responses every year. They broadcast in 100 languages in 40 countries, so great ministry. It's a great partnership, so encourage you to check it out, givearadio.org.
And the link, I think, is up on our website, too.
On our website as well. So. Well, speaking of wonder and awe, that is going to be our conversation today. And we're going to reflect on one of Paul David Tripp's wonderful books, called Awe, A-W-E, Awe, Why It Matters for Everything We Think, Say, and Do. Let me introduce Paul. He's returning to Connecting Faith. Paul David Tripp is president of Paul Tripp Ministries. He's a professor of pastoral life and care at Redeemer Seminary. He's executive director of the Center for Pastoral Life and Care under the auspices of the Association of Biblical Counselors, author of a number of books on Christian living, including What Did You Expect, Whiter Than Snow, A Shelter in the Time of Storm, Dangerous Calling, Sex and Money. And a more recent one was a daily devotional called New Morning Mercies, a daily gospel devotional. And we are honored to have him back with us. He and his wife, Luella, have four grown children and been married for a number of years. Paul, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
So humans are hardwired for awe, but even if we're hardwired for it, do we really pursue it? And maybe we need to talk about what do we mean by awe and pursuing awe.
Yeah, human beings have a hunger to be amazed, a hunger for wonder in their lives. That's why we like the triple overtime NBA game or a seven-layer chocolate cake or a dramatic piece of music or a movie. We want that in our lives. And that was placed in us by God to drive us to him. So human life is all about what captures your awe.
And obviously, in this life, in this world that is fallen, we have the opportunity to, I guess, to lose our true direction in terms of where we're pursuing awe.
Yeah, well, maybe it would be great just to backtrack a bit and say, so I've been hardwired for awe. That means I have a desire for that. I've been made by God with a capacity for awe. I've got all these awe gates, my eyes, my ears, my mind, my mouth, my skin, whatever. And God has put me in an awesome world, a world full of awesome things. All of that is meant to drive me to Him. Every awesome created thing is meant to be a finger that drives me toward awe of God, and there alone will my heart be satisfied. What happens to us is we try to satisfy ourselves by awesome creative things. That never ever ends up in satisfaction, ends up in disappointment and addiction.
And you've written about that so powerfully. I think maybe last time we talked, it was about the book Sex and Money, and those are a couple of maybe a key distractors, I guess, from awe. We might revisit that a little bit. But so say more about when awe is misplaced. Is addiction, I mean, is that sort of the far end of the continuum, or is this really
sure,
a...
because what happens... Well, what you're actually looking for is... You're looking for life. You're looking for something that's just ultimately satisfying. You're actually searching for God. But if you stop at the creation has no power to satisfy your heart. So you either get up and get discouraged, get cynical and bitter and depressed, or you keep going back again and again and again. And the buzz is more and more short term each time, and you end up addicted to something. All of that is because you're asking created things to do for you what they were never intended to do, and that is satisfy your heart.
Now, you've been for many years in pastoral ministry, and you've been working with pastors in ministry. Even good things like pursuing ministry, those things, or maybe it's work or family, those things can replace our true sense of awe and wonder in God, can't they?
Yeah, well, you take the life of a pastor. There are kind of two things that tend to happen. One is I begin to look to my ministry to provide for me what only God can provide. So I'm trying to get my identity, my sense of well-being out of ministry. And I'm just going to say this, ministry is a miserable place to get your identity. It just is. It never works. The other thing is I deal with the dynamic of familiarity. There is a sense in which the closer I am to something and the more I see it, the less I'm inspired by it. You know, if you're driving to work for your first time and you're driving down a wooded road and you see these beautiful, massive trees, you're so thankful that you get to drive that way. 6 weeks later, you're on the same road, you're pounding the dash, this traffic drives me crazy, and you haven't seen a tree in 6 weeks. That's what happens to us. So there's always a danger of amnesia in all of us, that we lose our wonder. And when you lose your wonder of God, you search for that someplace else.
So say more about why does that happen? I mean, we recognize it does happen, but is it just a matter of, is familiarity, that, wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, but in this case, it sends us down a wrong path.
Well, I think there's another thing that it's captured in 2 Corinthians 5:15, where Paul says that Jesus came so that those who live would no longer live for themselves. There is a war in my heart between awe of self and awe of God. Awe of self means I put myself in the center of my world, and I make it all about me. I'm more engaged by my wants, my needs, my feelings than God's existence, his presence, his plan. So that's that's always a war. So because that selfishness, because it's the DNA of sin, still exists in my heart, I've got to do things that stoke an awareness of God, awe of God, in my life.
When you use the word awe of self, I guess maybe a first thought is, well, that sounds like a massive ego pride problem, and most people say, well, I don't have that, but this is more maybe subtle and sinister.
Oh, it's way more subtle than that. I mean, think about being in the line at a grocery store, and you're growingly uptight because someone in front of you is slow, and they've taken 45 seconds of your day away. Think how arrogant that is. It doesn't seem arrogant at the moment, but that's me in the center of the world. Or why do we get angry in traffic? Well, I get angry in traffic because I want to drive on roads paid for by other citizens who choose not to use them because I don't want people in my way. Why do I get upset when people disagree with me? Why am I jealous when someone is blessed in ways that I haven't? I mean, there's all kinds of subtleties of this that aren't the kind of in-your-face arrogance that you would typically think about when you hear the phrase "off self."
Is this writing this, talking about this, reflecting on this? Is this something that's sort of come out of your own experience, maybe as you've honestly evaluated your life and say, you know, there's areas where I am in awe of self more than awe of God?
Absolutely. I mean, my writing ministry is, I don't write as an expert. I write out of my own need. And I reason that if this is a struggle for me, it's going to be a struggle for others. And that's why I tell all of my own personal stories in my writing. And I think, yes, this was written out of a sense that I get lulled to sleep, that glorious things become familiar to me, that I too often am impatient and self-oriented, and that's about awe. It's about losing sense that I was created to be part of something bigger than myself. I was created for someone other than myself. And boy, at street level, that's real easy to lose. Mm-hmm.
We're going to unpack more about this struggle and how we can maybe realign ourselves with the awe of God and the focus move off from the awe of self. We're talking awe, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. Paul David Tripp is my guest today. Paul is a professor of pastoral life and care at Redeemer Seminary. He's a consultant, speaker, author, and you can find out more about his resources and his writings at paultrippministries.org. We do have a couple of copies of this wonderful resource titled simply Awe from Paul Tripp, and we're going to give those away here at the end of the hour. So if you'd like to sign up for that, it would be some great summer reading here. This first day of summer might be a time to just reconnect with the glory and the wonder and the majesty of God. It's not just about, you know, spending some time out on the deck and enjoying creation, although that's important, but how do we make sure that we're living hardwired for awe and giving recognizing awe of God day by day? Talk more about it here in the moments ahead. You can join the conversation. Sign up for a copy of the book at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Too often we stand in awe of everything but God. We're addressing the topic today with Paul David Tripp, pastor, author, speaker, professor, counselor, talking awe, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. And Paul, you used the word awe amnesia briefly before. Just say a little bit more about that, maybe how we define that.
Well, it's again, when you, at the level of your practical, everyday experience, the way you make decisions, the way you interact with people, the way you spend your time, you're essentially living as if God doesn't exist. And so your again, street level life is really a constant hunt for something to satisfy you, something to make life worthwhile. Let me say, I think that's a huge issue for marriage, because my spouse doesn't exist to bring satisfaction into my heart. My spouse can't give me life. And so often people load into marriage a huge burden that marriage will never fulfill. There's a thousand ways that this gets played out. Let me give you another example. What's materialism about? Why do people keep buying? Why do people buy themselves into financial trouble? Why do people buy until they have to rent storehouses, storerooms, you know, storage places to keep their stuff? I would argue that materialism is an awe problem before it's a thing problem. That if I've forgotten God, if awe of Him isn't ruling my heart, then I'm going to look horizontally to be satisfied. Maybe this next car, maybe this next outfit, maybe this next vacation, maybe this next house. So there it is. Or one final example: your emotional life is a window into what's captured your awe. Because it'd be interesting for the listener to sit down and say, when am I most happy? When am I most discouraged? When am I most angry? When am I most fearful? You answer those honestly, you will locate what's captured your awe. Because when I'm most discouraged is when the thing that's captured my awe seems to fall through my fingers. When I'm happiest is when I seem to be enjoying it. When I'm fearful is when I think I'll never get it. When I'm angry is when someone or some way something is in the way of it. So the stuff I think lives a lot more prominently in everyday life than we tend to think.
And I guess we go back to Adam and Eve. Wonder how could they make that choice? Because clearly they had it all, right? I mean, there was nothing that was missing, and yet they gave away that vertical relationship. Didn't they?
Yeah, and it's so. What do you have there? Something other than the gorgeous beauty of their relationship to God captures their hearts. Something becomes more valuable, a greater treasure to them than God is. And once that happens, what follows next makes sense. Because if this is better, if this provides for me something that God doesn't provide, I'm going there. And that's why, look at the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments teach us that transgression, breaking God's law, is an awe problem before it's a law problem. Why do they teach us that? Because the first commands are all about what? They're about worship of God. They're about awe of God. Because God knows if you don't keep those commands, you'll never keep the rest of the commands. And so we when awe of God isn't capturing our hearts, we step over God's boundaries.
You, I think, describe, I love the way you describe it. You say the seedbed for the life of obedience is awe. I mean, as you say, it's awe before law.
That's right. It's you tend to run after that thing that has created wonder and joy and satisfaction in your heart. And when you're there, keeping God's commands isn't burdensome. You want to do it because you have such a deep appreciation, a deep sense of thankfulness, a deep sense of privilege. And out of that comes a heart of willing obedience.
Which I guess is why, as you address it, complaining is no little thing. I mean, I think we probably just sort of overlook it, say, well, yes, it's just, you know, I'm having a bad day, but there's more to it than that, isn't it?
Well, it's theological because all of us happen to be theologians. We're all living in connection to God, and so complaint questions God's wisdom. It questions His goodness. It questions His plan. It's a lot more significant, important than we would think. You get this in the beginning of Deuteronomy, where you know is the Israelites about to cross over to the Promised Land, and they've realized there are giant people over there, and they begin to complain, and God names their grumbling as rebellion against Him. That's how He sees it. He sees it as being theological. Again, maybe my tendency toward complaint reveals what kind of awe has captured my heart.
We're going to continue and maybe unpack some of those areas of complaint. In fact, there are some questions that either, as Paul David Tripp says, either steal or seal our hope. We'll review some of those questions and more as we talk awe today. Why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. And I don't know how your day is going today. If you've been just kind of, you know, head down and working the plan or whatever you have going on. But it's time to stop and look up and reflect. And let's uncover some of the lies we believe about all the earthly things that promises peace, life, and contentment. And Paul David Tripp will help redirect our gaze to God's awe-inducing glory. Now, talking awe today, we've got some copies of the book to give away. And I'd love to have you sign up for one. Great encouragement, as all of Paul's writings are. So check it out. You can sign up for that. We'll do the drawing at the end of the show. We've got a couple of copies to give away. You can sign up at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. You may have a question or a comment, like to join our discussion. We'd welcome that as well. And you can also send us an email if that's more convenient. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. Paul David Tripp, president of Paul Tripp Ministries, a professor of pastoral life and care at Redeemer Seminary, and our guest today on Connecting Faith. Humans are hardwired for awe. Our hearts are always captured by something. That's how God made us. But sin threatens to distract us from the glory of our Creator, and all too often we stand in awe of everything but God. We're learning about awe today, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. That's the title of a wonderful book from Paul David Tripp. Paul has authored several books, including What Did You Expect?, Whiter Than Snow, A Shelter in the Time of Storm, Dangerous Calling, Sex and Money, I think was one of the last times we had Paul on with us talking about that wonderful book, and a new devotional called New Morning Mercies. Paul Paul David Tripp is president of Paul Tripp Ministries. You can find out more at paultrippministries.org. Paul, we're talking about awe today. We talk how familiarity can be an enemy of awe, awe amnesia. But is there a biblical setting that would kind of help us zero in on what we're really talking about, why it's so important?
I think one of the most familiar stories in the New Testament is just a great example of this struggle. And it's a story where people know the story, but they don't know the punchline of the story. It's when Jesus fed the 5,000, the crowd, the multitude of 5,000 from the little boy's lunch. After the miracle of that feeding, the crowd is crazed, and they want to make Jesus their king. Now, you think that would be a grand moment. That's what he came for. He came to be a king. But Jesus does something surprising. Rather than celebrate the moment, he hides. He takes off. And the crowd searches for him. And when they finally find him, he says something that's just very important to understand. He says, you want to make me king because you've just had your bellies full. You ate the bread, but you didn't see the sign. That word is very interesting. Think about that. A sign is not the thing. A sign points to the thing. And what he's saying is, this miracle was meant to point you to me. I'm the bread of life. I'm the bread that will satisfy your heart. But you just want me to be king because you think I'll be able to provide for you an endless buffet of physical food. There's the struggle. In their excitement at what had been provided, they completely lost sight that that provision was meant to point to the provider who could give them life. And we're all like that multitude. I'd have been there. I'd have been thinking, wow, bread forever. Follow this guy. And Jesus says, you've missed the whole point. This moment was meant to point you to me. I'm bread. You eat of me, and you'll never hunger again.
Whether it's God providing, God doing good things for us, or us going through difficult things, I mean, both, I guess, should be pointing us toward God, right? I think that's where you address those questions that either steal or seal our hope.
Yeah, I actually think that there is some way that every human being, even those who say they're irreligious, are asking and answering these questions. Can I go through them with you?
Sure, let's do it.
The first one, is God good? The reason that question is so foundational is if because of the circumstances you've gone through, you begin to question the goodness of God, the result will be you'll quit going to him for help, because you don't go for help to someone you no longer trust. So that's a very, very significant thing. A second, will God, in fact, do what he's promised? How could you not be excited about the promises of God? But I think there's a lot of people at street level don't really believe that he will deliver what he's promised. Well, if you don't think that he'll deliver what he's promised, you're no longer motivated by those promises in terms of the way you live your life. Is God in control? Huge, huge issue. Now, let me propose something to you. That will God do what he promised and is he in control have to be held together, because God's ability to deliver his promises is only as good as the extent of his control. In other words, I can only guarantee that I can do something in a place where I have control, or I can't make that guarantee. And if God is not in control, then how can I rely on his promises? what makes his promises reliable is that the Bible teaches us he rules every situation, every location, every circumstance where those promises need to be delivered. Third, does God have the needed power? You are either motivated or demotivated by your estimation of God's power. That's why the Bible in places stretches the human language to try to show us the glorious power of God, because we don't have categories, and so it's easy to diminish God's power. And then finally, this is really the capstone of all these things, because whether you believe God's good, whether his promises are sure, whether he's in control, or his power, here's a fifth one. Does he care about, if you don't think he cares about you, then none of those things will encourage you. Ultimately, what every human being deep in their heart desire is to be loved. That is absolutely universal. You go to anywhere in the world, and when you scratch below the surface of culture, you'll find human beings want to be loved. And the question, the ultimate question is, does God love me? If he loves me, then I know he will exercise his power and his promises and his control and his goodness for my welfare.
Is it possible for us to sort of reclaim awe on our own, or is that something where God has to enlighten us or enliven us or refresh us, do for us?
Well, anybody who reads me much knows that I deeply believe that my life is a community project. I'm not meant to do this by myself. I need help. There are moments where I've lost my awe and I don't know it. So yes, but I think there are habits that you can nail into your life that help reclaim or stimulate your awe. Can I give you four of those?
Mm-hmm.
I encourage this every time I speak on this topic. I give people homework, and here's the homework. It's captured by four words. The first word is gaze. Every morning, get up and gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. Gaze upon the awesome glory of the Lord. I'm not talking about your normal Bible reading or your normal devotional habits, but just take a few moments to gaze upon God's awesome glory. And you say, how do I do that? Well, read Isaiah 40, where the human language is stretched as far as it can go to capture the glory of God. The last few chapters of Job, where Job had that, where God had that, where were you when foundations of creation were laid conversation, and just shows God's splendor. Or Ephesians 1 that shows the sweeping plan of God, saving plan of God through generations. So, go somewhere that reminds you of the glory of God you can gaze upon it. Second word is remember. This is really important. Remember that awesome glory doesn't just define who God is, it redefines who you are as his child. Because God has unleashed that glory on his children. All that God is in his splendor, he is for us by grace. Good theology never just defines God. Good theology always redefines who I am as God's child. So gaze, remember. Now rest. Teach your heart to rest, not because people like you, not because your job is easy, not because your children are obeying, not because your marriage is good, not because finances are working, but because God is, and he has connected you to him by grace. You have reason to rest. Fourth word is act. Now go out and live your life. Live based on God's awesome glory. Live based on your remembrance that glory has been unleashed on you. Live out of a restful heart. And I just think you just need to do that day after day after day after day, because there's an awe battle going on in our hearts.
Gaze, remember, rest, and act. Four habits to help us reclaim awe. Talking about awe today, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. Paul David Tripp, my guest. We'll take a quick break, come back for another segment, and we'll talk about some practical ways, too, in terms of those horizontal relationships. We have our vertical relationship right. How does that impact our horizontal relationships? Talk about parenting. We'll talk about how we get along at church. Some of those things as well, just relating to our identity of who and understanding of who God is as opposed to who we are. All that ahead. We do have some copies of the book Awe to give away. Hope you've been challenged and encouraged here in this first day of summer to just celebrate and recognize the greatness of God. You can sign up for that. We'll do a drawing here at the end of the hour at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Paul David Tripp, president of Paul Tripp Ministries, professor of pastoral life and care at the Redeemer Seminary. And he is also serves as executive director of the Center for Pastoral Life and Care in Fort Worth, Texas, and taught at institutions around the world, author of a number of books. We're honored to have him with us today here on Connecting Faith. There's more to come. Isaiah 40, we referenced that here just the past few minutes, and it may be that you have a few minutes today where you could simply open up your Bible and reread Isaiah 40. If it's been a while, maybe you have that song playing in the background or just running through your mind as you look over those words again to realize who God is, helping us to understand more about God's wiring us to worship Him, to be in awe of Him. We're talking awe today, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do, written by Paul David Tripp. My guest today is one of the writers that had endorsed the book. Bart Miller, the lead singer of Mercy Me, says, Tripp has tapped into something that I hope is like a defibrillator to the flatline believer. We were made to live in awe. May we never forget this. I hope that's the bottom line of our conversation today. Paul, you mentioned a little bit ago, you said that, you know, anybody who's read your works knows that you're a community project. You address about church shopping, speaking of community, and how that is related to our lack of awe. Say a bit about that.
Well, what is the sort of the heart motivation, the core of that, that never satisfied with the church and shopping? I call it ecclesiastical Macy's. It's like the church's department store. Well, that's me in the center of my world. And my relationship to the church is my taste, my desire, what I want for me out of that experience, rather than that God has called me into a willing, responsible commitment to his body, to commit myself, to be use my gifts there, and so a healthy church life always has God at the center of it, not me at the center of it. And there's an awful lot of people who basically have a consumer's relationship to the church.
Is me-centered parenting an issue as well? I mean, maybe we don't even realize that, but what would it look like if we had awe in our horizontal relationships?
Well, there's so much that can be said about this. Let's go two ways here. First, if if all I do is use whatever power I have as a parent to regulate and control the behavior of my children while they're in my home, when they leave my home, they have nothing. Every year, there are thousands of supposedly Christian young people who go off to residential universities and forsake the faith. I would propose to you that they're not forsaking the faith. They never had it in the first place. They were under a neat system of Christian parental control. And once that that system is lifted, their true hearts come out. I mean, I think Psalm 145 is one of the best parenting passages in Scripture because it says, "One generation shall declare your works to another." And then the psalmist does a riff on the glory of God. What he's saying is, principle to parenting is being used of God to instill awe of God in my children. Because if they don't have awe of God, then they're sitting ducks for lawlessness and materialism and the selfism that is disruptive to the workplace, it's disruptive to the church, it's disruptive to marriage, it's disruptive to friendships. So awe is right at the center of good parenting. Let me say another thing. Why is there so much parental anger in us? Because awe of self has replaced awe of God, and we don't like to face the hassles of parenting little sinful self sovereigns who are going to rebel and going to mess up our schedule and will make the dinner table uncomfortable. And so what comes out of us is anger. We turn moments of ministry, God-given moments of ministry, into moments of anger. If I could just say one more thing, sure, about that. Here's what I think is important to remember. This God of awesome grace, here's how he operates. He's put these children in a family of faith because he loves them. So if my eyes ever see or my ears ever hear the sin, weakness, and failure of my children, it's never an accident. It's never an interruption. It's never a hassle. It's always grace. God loves them. He's placed them in a family of faith, and he's going to expose the need of those children to me, so I can be a tool of his grace, his forgiveness, and his rescue. You see, that's how awe of God makes you look at those tough parental moments in a radically different way.
Well, I was thinking, I know you share a little bit in the book too, that it might be a good word for a pastor, someone in ministry today who's maybe, you know, struggling or frustrated with a church that has some sinful self-sovereigns in it. Psalm 145 might be appropriate there as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I'm very aware of every time I preach is that one of the foundational things my preaching is meant to do is give people back their awe of God again. One of the things the worship service is meant to do is give people back their awe of God again. Because gathered on Sunday will be a lot of awe amnesiacs, and they don't even know it. And I want them just to be in the most spiritual sense of what this means, blown away by the glory of God in such a way they say, I want to serve him, I want to follow him, I want to love him.
So are you looking for awe in sort of every passage you preach? I mean, if you're going through a study of, a book of the Bible or something, I mean, how do you incorporate that into, everything that we think, say, and do?
Well, I think that I want to find those places where in Scripture where the curtain is pulled back and I see God for who he is in his glory. And because they're sprinkled out throughout Scripture, that's something I'm always looking for. And then I think it's really helpful to examine your emotional life. Again, where you're happiest, where you're most discouraged, where you're fearful, where you're angry, and ask the question, what does that tell me about what has captured my awe? And then those daily habits that I've given you. So what you do is you wake up in the morning and you say, I cannot deliver myself from this all battle. Only God can do that by his grace. But I want to learn to be a good soldier in the conflict. I want to become more aware. I want to be concerned about the awe capacity of my heart. And I want to look for evidences that I'm functioning out of awe amnesia, or that there's been a replacement. God has been replaced by something else, or my life is shaped more by awe of self than awe of God.
The end of the book concludes with a quote from C.S. Lewis. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. Let me just leave us with some encouragement about the dissatisfaction we experience in this life.
Well, the fact of the matter is that God intends for the physical things this world to be dissatisfying because he's made us for another world. And what will satisfy us in that other world will not be better stuff. It will be him. And so in love, he lets us taste the dissatisfying fruit of the created world so our hearts would be hungry. My silly way of talking about that is I think that the whole purpose of camping is to make you desire home and appreciate home. You know, when you first go out to camp, everything's great, but before long, the food doesn't taste that great, and the wood is hard to find for the fire, and your back hurts, and you begin thinking about the ease and the comforts of home. That's what God is doing in our hearts. He's not putting us through hard experiences and disappointing experiences because he doesn't love us, but because he loves us. And he's drawing our hearts toward him, and he's preparing our hearts for when we're in a place where the only thing we'll ever look to for satisfaction is him. And the all war will be over, and we will live in moment by moment motivating awe of God forever and ever.
What a wonderful picture to maybe recapture our hearts today to the glory of our Creator, to the wonder, the majesty of God, to be filled with awe at who he is and all that he does for us. Awe, why it matters for everything we think, say, and do. That's the title of Paul David Tripp's book we've been reflecting on today, and I hope that just our conversation has perhaps challenged you in a new way to gaze upon the splendor and majesty of God, to remember his goodness and who he is, and then to rest in his work and his sovereignty, and then to out of that to act in hope and confidence today. Paul David Tripp, president of Paul Tripp Ministries, professor of pastoral life and care at Redeemer Seminary, and he's also executive director of the Center for Pastoral Life and Care, and under the auspices of the Association of Biblical Counselors, written a number of books. You can find out more about his wonderful writings and his work at paultrippministries.org. Paul, we're grateful to have some time again with you, and thank you for just helping us see more clearly the God of creation, the one who draws us to himself day by day.
Well, it's always good to be with you. Thanks.
Paul David Tripp joining us today. Maybe you missed part of today's program or want to pass it on to a friend. You know, all our podcasts are posted, interviews posted online after the show, and they're all shareable. So just go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com and look for the audio archives there, myfaithradio.com.